Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. As the gentleman said, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici, and welcome 2015. Merry Christmas also. And part two today of laboratory blood tests separating truth from fiction. We started last week because we know what's going to happen in the next month or so. You're going to do your yearly physical. You get that out of the way at the beginning of the year. And you trust that blood work that you get. And what we want to do today, second week, is go into it, break it down, and take a look at what it really means and what it doesn't mean. And understanding that there are a lot of specialty tests that you can get today that, well, maybe your insurance isn't going to pay for, but that you should know about, because that's really where you can get the insight you need. Get to the website, straighttalk.cc, look at the pictures, and let's go. All right. General rules with blood testing. And we started on this last week, but I want to get into that a little bit more today. Concepts that you should understand about your lab work so that you can decipher it a little bit more precisely. First of all, the minerals. And again, at the top of the literature section where you see the full articles, so go to the top, you're going to see the CBC and the chemistry panel. Click that because I'm going to use that one that I put on the website as sort of a landmark so we can have our discussion today. And when you scroll down on that, again, it's in the literature section on the site. When you scroll down and you get to the second page, not the first, but the second page, you're going to see where it says CBC. We're going to discuss the complete blood count. That's a panel that you get every single year or twice a year, a CBC, and then also a chemistry panel. And both of those we're going to use today. Now, if you move down under the CBC and keep scrolling, you'll get to, probably on the fourth page for you, you're going to get to where the minerals are. So just keep scrolling until you can see the following minerals. You're going to see calcium, you're going to see phosphorus, you're going to see potassium. And every chemistry panel has the minerals. Sodium, potassium, chloride. Sometimes they'll call it a chem panel, sometimes they'll call it a comprehensive metabolic panel. And this is the blood's mineral level. Now, these are relevant, but usually and only when a body's in an acute crisis. And that's not what you're interested in. You're presenting to your doctor each year, hopefully not in acute crisis state. You're presenting because you want to prevent that from happening. And one of the fallacies of looking at the minerals, sodium, potassium, chloride, phosphorus, is that by the time it's deficient in the minerals, by the time the minerals are deficient in the blood, they're so deficient in other parts of the body that you're already in crisis. You want the information long before this. You want to know when, although that mineral concentration is okay in the blood, it's normal in the blood, you want to know that it's starting to become deficient inside the cell or in between the cells. And really what you have to understand is the different spaces different spaces inside the body, different compartments. If you look at picture number 3, we separate the body's compartments into the blood, then into the space between the cells, then into the space inside the cell. Now, we've done this before, but you'll see it's a different perspective now. When you're looking at your blood work and you're looking at your mineral contents, you're dealing with the blood, the space in between the cells. So pick an organ, say the liver. The space in between those cells of the liver, that's not your blood. That's the interstitial or intercellular space. And then, of course, each organ, in this case the liver, is made of cells, and inside that cell is the intracellular space. Now, each of those compartments, the blood, the space in between the cells, and the space inside the cell, they have different mineral compositions. And what we're interested in finding out is when that cell has been running for years on end in a mineral deficiency or a mineral excess. But this is inside the cell. This has nothing to do with the blood. And this same issue of mineral ratios going on in between the cells. But when you're getting your blood work, this is telling you something that's just almost insignificant next to these other two spaces. It's telling you the concentration of minerals in the blood itself. By the time it even approaches deficiency or excess in the blood, it's been messed up in the cell for a long time. And again, this sort of annuls. It doesn't mean that it's not important to do this, but it doesn't mean just because it's normal there, you don't have to think about what's going on where it really counts. The big point here being the blood is a buffer system, meaning the last place you're going to see a deficiency is in the blood. The last place the brain will let a deficiency occur in the body is the blood. And yet this is the first and most common place we're looking for it. You got to keep this in mind, because this yearly or biannual blood work you're getting that you're very, very confident tells you exactly what's going on and that you can relax behind norms that are met inside these tests. This really isn't the case when it comes to minerals, and there's quite a few other things we're going to take a look at today that follow suit. Now, one of the people that understood this, if you turn to picture number 8, was Dr. Paul Eck, E-C-K. He was a biochemist. He had a Ph.D. in biochemistry. There's him on picture number 8. And at least he attempted to set up some sort of a methodology through which we could understand what was going on mineral-wise inside the cell. And he began and evolved. And I don't necessarily think that he had it figured out completely, but the point to you is, it is understood very much so that what you're seeing on your lab work doesn't reflect the health inside your cell. And Dr. Eck understood this, and if you turn to picture number 6, he began a methodology that he called nutritional balancing science that had a great deal to do with hair analysis. And this introduction to nutritional balancing science was developed by Paul Eck in the 70s. He founded Analytical Research Labs in Phoenix, worked with Dr. Wilson, passed away in 1996. And there were two components of it. It was really one, and then the interpretation. And the one component was hair analysis. Now, hair analysis, there are many types of hair analysis is done, and everybody criticizes everybody else's. And while I really don't have anything to tell you outside of this that I would begin to trust, Nick Gonzalez, I think, does one at a New York City. He's an oncologist. And Dr. Paul Eck, at least he's made the attempt to do it. And this works carry on today through Dr. Wilson and other people that evolved his work. But I don't think we have it figured out. I think we're in a state of evolution on it. What's important for you to know, though, for the boundaries of this show, is the blood work you're getting doesn't even scratch the door on this. And that's the point. So, sodium, potassium, phosphorus, calcium, magnesium. These things are being jockeyed around the body in between these three spaces, and the last place you're going to find a deficiency or an excess is the blood. Now, when you do, it reflects your excretory organs are not working. Usually, mineral imbalance in the body is reflected in renal failure or the beginning of renal failure. And we get into this last week, so I won't labor it today. Again, that kidney being broken down into its capillary tuft, the glomerulus, and then the tubules. In between the capillary tuft, the glomerulus, and the renal tubules, in the process of making urine, your kidneys are going to be exquisitely efficient or mildly inefficient or very inefficient at making sure that that buffer system in the blood is working. So when you're talking minerals, you're talking, are you ingesting those minerals? Are you absorbing those minerals? We don't really know in what ratios each and every day we're supposed to ingest minerals. We don't, from the trace minerals to our main minerals. But what we're trusting is that the kidney and the other organs of elimination and just the whole cellular intelligence of the body, all the different diffusions and active transport systems that balance mineral inside the cell, so on and so forth, are working correctly. And this is usually borne out on the back of your kidneys, which your skin, of course, is a very important backup system to. So on that lab work that I gave you, and forevermore, keep in mind that your minerals don't really reflect what's going inside in the cell. Now, that's one general fallacy with lab work. Another one is that the norms that you get are not your norms. And this week I put two pictures in. Picture number one, there's a book, I think I mentioned it last week, Biochemical Individuality. And that's by Roger Williams. He was a doctorate. He had a PhD in chemistry. You can see him in picture number two with Linus Pauling. They were colleagues. Both had an interest in nutrition, as did Paul Eck, another biochemist. So you've had, over the last 30, 40 years, an entourage of biochemists, conventionally trained chemists, that get very interested in sort of this holistic angle. And this is what spawned off a lot of really great insight. This is the type of mindset that's really been there to back up the holistic perspective. Understand that for as much as most of the people in holistic medicine don't know the science behind it, they're very involved in the practice and function of it. A certain percentage of holistic medicine has a hard science behind it. And Roger Williams and Linus Pauling and Paul Eck were all part of this. But Williams's point in Biochemical Individuality, and this is, again, another little angle on the myth of the blood test, and that is that the norm you're getting may not be your norm. That a good 15 to 20% of anything you measure in the body and that you're given a norm for does not reflect your norm, your specific norm. Now, the other thing that Roger Williams understood, and I think a lot of your better scientists understand, is that the only real meaning to these tests is as you compare it to the other tests that you've had. You can't go in and look at a thyroid gland or even a cardiovascular panel, certainly a mineral exam. Anything really subject to how it looked the year before and the year before and the year before. anemia, which we'll get to later, another really important test to interpret. Anemia and what your hemoglobin functions at, what your hemoglobin's supposed to be, can vary tremendously depending upon who you are. And the way you really nail it, as with many of these other tests, is relative to the way it was the year before and the year before and the year before. So you think about this test you're getting each year. Blood minerals don't really reflect the right space. The norms really are not your norms. You really can't just jump in and say on the basis of one measurement that your thyroid's off or you're anemic. The other mythology is that you can trust these things without correlating it to symptomology. And there's another mainstream insight. When you get blood work, it's only as good as it correlates to the way your body feels. Correlate to clinical tests. The way your body feels and your ability to refine your sensitivity to the way your body feels should be your navigation light. That ought to be your navigation system. It's terrible to simply forego that and simply trust the lab test. When you make these tests, the exalted machine through which you create your sense of reality and your health, whether you're healing or getting sick, you make a terrible mistake. The lab test, the blood test, the CT scan, the picture must be correlated to the way you feel. And as you improve, the lab work is only proving to you or giving you commentary on how you already know you feel. You really got to reverse that in your mind. Otherwise, you're enslaved to lab tests. Lab tests where norms aren't your norms. Lab tests where the only real meaning of it is prior to the test before. And as you'll see, the whole argument for the blood work gets weak. It becomes just a tool instead of this very, very unifying, guiding. It's where you go for your leadership, and it's really where in what should take the back seat. The other thing is high normals and low normals. When you have a range of, say, 6 to 20, any range that you look at in a blood test, say the range is 12 to 15, and you come in at 12, you don't know if normally you run at 14. If you are on the high end of something, like 16, you don't know if normally you were running at 15. And so anytime you're near the high norm or the low norm, again, if somebody says that's not normal, it backs you down to what you were the last time. Again, high norms and low norms are a flag. They're a weak flag, and they have to be contrasted with how you were reading the year before and the year before that. Then understand this about your blood work each year. Managed care doesn't want to pay for it. And a lot of the tests, the specialized tests, you have to pay out of pocket for, or you really got to push your doctor for, and your doctor may not really understand what these tests are. We're going to mention oxidized cholesterol later, free T3, free T4. The difference between a protein-bound hormone and a free hormone that you measure, say, in the saliva. These types of tests, a lot of medical doctors don't understand. Or don't order, because the standard of care says just give people the general test, and if you see a flag, then maybe you can go into it a little bit more. But that's not the way it works. A lot of times you have to understand your test, and you have to go in and ask for these things, and you have to cajole and persuade and make a relationship with your doctor and push them. And that's one of the purposes of the show today, to take a CBC, a chemistry panel, and specialty tests, at least the basic ones, so that over 2015 you can operate more intelligently with your doctors. Now, another test is thyroid. If you get a thyroid panel, and again, if you go to the lab work, if you keep scrolling down, just the beginning of the second page, so the first page, and then just move down to the second page, just below triglycerides, HDL, LDL cholesterol, to thyroid. Here's a thyroid panel. It should have been a little bit more comprehensive. This thyroid panel should have had what we call free T3. Free T3. It should have had free T4. You're looking at TSH. You're looking at T4, but that's bound T4. What do I mean? Go to the pictures. Go to the pictures for this, so you're going to have to sweep back and look at the picture. And go to picture number, I will get it for you. This is picture number 10. Take a look at picture 10, and this is the feedback loop between the hypothalamus, the pituitary, and the thyroid. That feedback loop, to understand that when you're looking at hormones, they're in relationship to receptor sites, hypothalamic, pituitary, in the brain. That's important for a lot of reasons. And the way a feedback loop is going to work is if we're measuring thyroxin, say T4, and it starts to get low, a message goes up to your hypothalamus in the brain, and the hypothalamus responds by sending a message to your pituitary, and then your pituitary responds by sending a message to your thyroid to increase production. And that message from the pituitary to the thyroid is sent via what we call TSH, or the thyroid stimulating hormone. So that's your TSH then. You can see this individual's TSH is high. Now that's a flag. Look at the norm on that. 0.450 to 0.45 international units per milliliter. Now what that's telling you is that the pituitary is getting a message from the hypothalamus to send, through thyroid-stimulating hormone, a kick in the pants to the thyroid gland to bring up thyroxin. The thyroid gland produces thyroxin, which is T4. And that thyroxin produced by the thyroid gland goes over to the liver and is converted to T3. When you get a thyroid panel, you have to get free T4 and free T3. Just to get TH doesn't tell you enough. Again, you would want to have your TSH measured against the last couple of years. And most importantly, you have to remember that when you have low T3 or low T4, and you're told it's time to take Synthroid, or it's time to take levothyroxine, you've kind of got it backwards then. We say your thyroid's sluggish, and so your metabolism's sluggish, so let's feed you Synthroid or Westroid or Naturethroid to stimulate the metabolism of the body to compensate us for a sluggish thyroid. And this is exactly where the pitfall is. It's the other way around. Don't feed your thyroid to increase your metabolism. Bring up your general level of health. Do all the things that stimulate metabolism to kick your thyroid in. This is a very large concept as it relates to whether or not you should trust your lab work. First, for the thyroid, did you get the right lab work? Just getting TSH and not free T3, unbound T4, unbound T3, which we call free. A lot of your hormones are protein bound or albumin bound. And if you don't distinguish between the two, you're not really getting an understanding of what your active levels are. Your protein bound level may be higher or lower when your active level is more than enough. And you really don't know what's going on in any given moment behind that. So in short, it's a much more precise evaluation to make sure that your doctor orders, well, not just TSH, but free T3 and free T4. And to understand that the active hormone, the hormone that goes through your cell membrane to do all the things that thyroxine does, is measured as T3. That's the active hormone. And T4 is converted to T3. If you look at that picture there, picture number 10, you can see T4 is converted to T3 in the liver and the muscle. But most of it, 60 to 75%, is converted in the liver. Again, you've got that demand on the liver, that enormous demand on that organ. And when that organ finds itself somewhat sluggish, because it's got 1,600 things to do, because it's the workhorse of the body, perhaps your T4, T3 conversion will be sluggish. Now, you can get a lot more specific than that, but in the end, you're really left with noting that unless you really feed your liver what it takes your liver to metabolize efficiently, you may fall into a low T3. And that's exactly what's going to bump up your TSH. Now, you've got to understand that to really understand how to interpret your thyroid panels. If nothing else, make sure that you get TSH, T4, T3. You're not looking at that in this individual's panel right now. If you look at the panel, all they did, all right, there's no free. That thyroxine T4 on this gentleman, this person's blood work is not free T4. And there's no free T3 whatsoever. And again, look at the TSH and note that it's 4.59 and the high end is 4.5. Again, this is the kind of TSH you want measured relative to the year before and the year before that. And these mistakes or these superficial tests I see all the time. And understand that most often, this doesn't signal more precise tests to be taken. Usually, these things are either overlooked or your doctor starts medicating right off the bat because the TSH is a little bit high. And this is my point. Now, this is one gland of many glands. The reason you see so much emphasis on the thyroid is because the thyroid gland has a pharmaceutical solution. The emphasis should be on the adrenals. It should be on your cortisol levels, your free cortisol. But you won't see it there because we don't have an adequate or practical solution to low cortisol. We can't give you synthetic cortisol. We haven't invented a synthetic cortisol without so many side effects as to be more dangerous than the cost of operating under low cortisol. And if we don't have a solution, it becomes unimportant in the testing when there may be solutions outside the norm of pharmaceutical medicine. So you're going to see an enormous amount of emphasis placed on just get the TSH and the protein-bound T4 and give it a whirl. And if it's high or low, it's the synthroid or the levothyroxine. this isn't the way it's supposed to work. And there's lots of examples, as stated, as to why it's done this way. Managed care won't pay for the tests. The consumer, the client, they don't understand their thyroid. And in the end, it only gets emphasis if we've got a pharmaceutical solution. Again, of the glands, the adrenals should be given the emphasis. Let's keep going. Hemoglobin, if you just go below that. CBC, WBC, RBCs, hemoglobin. The hemoglobin. You see that? 12.6 to 17.7 grams per deciliter. Now you're going to look at yours this year. That got, nobody mentioned that to the individual. This wasn't cited. It's not important because it's within the norm. And if it's in the norm, then it's just fine. Now, if it was 12.5, maybe an alarm would have gone off. Maybe there would have been a big to-do. In the case of hemoglobin, most likely not. In the case of thyroxin, it's a big to-do because we've got a pharmaceutical solution. You see how that works? Thyroxin will trigger almost immediately a flag because we've got a solution. Hemoglobin, this is slip under the rug every time. Because it requires then a differential diagnosis. Why is somebody anemic? Diet, are they bleeding? There are so many reasons that the hemoglobin can drop low. In this case, we needed to understand that 12.6 is low normal. Low normal is already a flag. And then we need to understand that perhaps, based on prior testings, this individual's hemoglobin is normally up at 14. And this is exactly the case with this individual. This individual is grossly anemic. I want you to note, of course, I know this individual. I know this individual is grossly anemic. And there's a blood test, like the blood test you might have. And nothing's being mentioned. The doctor that ordered it didn't see it as anything out of range, and so it wasn't mentioned. And yet this individual's blood work a year before had the hemoglobin up at 13.8. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. Now, this is no small consequence. Hemoglobin is the molecule that captures the oxygen in the lung. Hemoglobin's the molecule that's part of the porphyrin ring on the red blood cell that goes to the lung to pull the oxygen in and then dumps the oxygen off in the cells of your body. Your body's Krebs cycle, your ability to make your ATP, it's all run on the backside of oxygen. And when the cell doesn't have oxygen, it functions without oxygen, anaerobically, makes a lot more toxic waste. Yeah, that's the terrain that cancer grows in, definitely. That's the terrain that disease grows in, definitely. Now, don't you think that should have rung a bell somewhere? But it didn't, and this is my point. This is why I'm taking the time to do these series now. Because everybody's in love with their blood work. They have to have their blood work. They have to take a look at that sheet of paper. It's like a report card in school. As long as there's no X's and flags, everybody's happy. Look at this. The thyroid panel was done incorrectly because there was no follow-up. There was no free T3. There was no free T4. There was no follow-up. There was no suggestion of anything. The hemoglobin didn't flag a thing. Again, this was completely misinterpreted. Now, this individual is not going to anything but the best that money can buy. This blood work was taken by supposedly very competent medical doctors, and yet nothing's mentioned, and this is my point. You have to just learn a little bit so you can cover it. I mean, isn't it kind of common sense? The norm here is 12.6 to 17.7 grams per deciliter, and you see 12.6. All you got to do is remember what I said on the show, that a low normal is a flag. And it's just common sense. And again, one of the reasons that this isn't mentioned is because what are we going to do? Your hemoglobin is low. Okay. You're not going to die with your hemoglobin 12.6. You're just going to create a terrain that can get you sick. And that's not an acute situation, so let's let it go. And even if we said something about it, what are we going to do? There's no synthetic pharmaceutical drug to tend to this. And that's my point. Now, your hematocrit, your MCV, your MCH, your MCHC, your RDW. This has to do with the various sizes and shapes of your red blood cells. I don't want to get into that. I don't think it's as clinically relevant to you. Go to the top, just above WBC. So you're looking at the same sheet. You see where it says CBC, platelet count, and differential? A differential means they break all the different components in the blood down to their individual cells. So just above hemoglobin, you'll see WBC 5.7. Above that, you'll see CBC, platelet count, and differential. A differential means that the sheet that you're looking at, what's before your eyes right now, has broken down everything in the blood into individual cells. Platelets at 248, neutrophils, lymphocytes, monocytes, eosinophils, basophils, so on and so forth. And then they've translated them to other forms. Now, a neutrophil is like a macrophage, is like a white blood cell. I think it'll help to say a lymph or a lymphocyte. That's the immune system cell that makes the antibodies. A monocyte is a baby white blood cell. An eosinophil is its own cell that'll go up to parasitic infection. And a basophil is an immune system cell that's part of an allergic reaction also. And say if we see the eosinophils are very high, we would suspect an allergy or potentially a parasite. If the lymphocytes are very high, it means the body's very busy sequestering lymphocytes to make antibodies, and we would think of a viral infection. If the WBCs are high, we don't think of viral infection. We would think more in terms of a bacterial infection. And again, infection, I don't know if we're going to be able to get to it today's show. Infectious disease we're going to take for part three. But in a CBC, there you have it. The WBCs, the RBCs. Now the RBCs, 4.21. Again, this individual is not making enough red blood cells. The depression in the RBC, even though it's not flagged, last year those RBCs were up in the fives. And they were up in the fives because that's where they're supposed to be. But again, this is not flagged because this panel is not compared and contrasted to prior panels. That's for you to do. You ought to have your prior blood results so you can compare. Now, when the RBCs begin to go down, if they go down, it may mean that the bone marrow is not putting out enough RBCs. If the RBCs go down, it may mean that the body is making more white blood cells and it can't afford to make more red blood cells. If the RBCs go up and the WBCs go down, you know who that happens to? Athletes. Athletes at altitudes need way more red blood cells because they need way more hemoglobin and way more oxygen to grab in the lung because there's less oxygen available at altitudes, and they need more oxygen because they're athletes. So sometimes you'll see the red blood cells go up, the white blood cells go down. The white blood cells will be lower than normal. They'll go down to 4 or 3, 5 because the RBCs need to go up. The body will trade off the bone marrow based upon the selective demand of the individual will trade off what it makes normally. So you've got your bone marrow making your platelets, your bone marrow making your RBCs, your WBCs, your eosinophils, your basophils. You've got the bone marrow being very, very busy in the production of the immune system. And yet each and every person at different times in their life, in different places, doing different things, will place different types of stresses on their bone marrow. And so the bone marrow will just trade one for the other. This has to be interpreted. Blood work, again, has to be interpreted to the big clinical picture. This is why when your health care is simply reduced to you walk in, you get your blood done, somebody checks to see if it's all within the norms, and you're out the door and you're happy because they told you everything seems to be good. This is the joke. This is not the case. This is something you want to study a little bit on your own. And you just have to apply your common sense. Let's keep moving down. Let's look at this on cortisol. So this is page 4. So if you stop, if you start from the beginning, we've got page 1 of this blood work, page 2 of this blood work, page 3, and then page 4. Page 4 shows you free cortisol. Okay, they did that one correctly. This is not protein-bound cortisol. Excellent. This is free cortisol in micromilligrams per deciliter, 0.68. Now again, is that normal? Well, it didn't flag anything. But it's important to know when it was collected. Because it's collected in the morning, it's going to be higher than it's collected in the evening. Now, this one, of course, was collected in the morning. This isn't exactly the highest reading you would want in the morning. Let's do this. Let's go to the top of this page. And, well, don't bother because we don't have the time. I'll simply have to have you just trust. This was definitely done in the morning, around 10 o'clock or so in the morning. But if you're looking at that, it's free cortisol, and 8 to 10 in the morning, it should be 0.31 to 1.19. It's 0.68, which isn't bad. It could be a little higher. So in this blood test, we measured free cortisol. We did that well. We didn't do the TSH and the thyroid panel too well. Definitely, if the TSH was high, the doctor should have suggested a follow-up test, breaking it down, free T3, free T4. Again, with your thyroid panels, if your T3 is low but your T4 is normal or high, it means the liver's not making the T4-T3 conversion. The problem can be in the liver, even though it appears it's a thyroid issue. You want to catch that because this is common with people. It's a sluggish liver that causes the TSH to go up, meaning the TSH goes up. The pituitary and the hypothalamus sense a problem when there's low T4. They sense a problem, but the problem is not about stimulating the thyroid. It's about making the liver convert T4 to T3, which is the active hormone. All that was overlooked. Now, the cortisol, it was measured. No recommendations were made, but at least it was measured. Let's keep scrolling. Vitamin D, always something you want to measure. Again, vitamin D, it's 72 nanograms per milliliter. That's good. Please don't be overly concerned about vitamin D toxicity. Vitamin D toxicity has to go well into the hundreds before you're even going to have a symptom, and it can drop very, very quickly. If you're supplementing to vitamin D, that's generally a good thing. You want to bring it up, not to 30 or 40 or 50. You want to get it up to 60 to 70 to the high end. Stephen Cannell's work really in the long term is going to be the new standard for your vitamin D, and that it does hundreds of things in the body, that it's critical as an anti-cancer vitamin to stimulate the immune system correctly. It should really be part of that blood work each year that often isn't even measured unless it's asked. Most of allopathic medicine is still in the Stone Age on this. Now let's keep scrolling. Again, let's take a look at the CBC again. Look at this one. The RBCs are 3.6. The hemoglobin's 12.3. This is an earlier test on the same individual. And it went up in the blood work I just read. But I put the prior blood work here so you can start to get a sense of how important it is to compare. This tells us that the hemoglobin that was 12.3 is now 12.6. That's the prior blood work that you just read a moment ago. But what it doesn't tell you is that a year ago it was well into 13. And if you're moving down, you see your lymphocytes are low and your monocytes are high. Now look at that. Your lymphocytes are low and your monocytes are high. There's another low-high thing. All that comes down to, and so I won't get too complicated here, but all that comes down to is that in the differential, neutrophils, lymphocytes, monocytes, different cells being produced in the bone marrow, based upon the priority for the body, cues are going into the bone marrow to jockey around what it produces. And so in the effort to get maybe the RBCs up, we're going to chuck out the lymphocytes. The body, the brain of the body, is going to decide which immune system cell to sacrifice so we can get the RBCs to go higher. Now that's fascinating. Look at that. Lymphocytes low, monocytes high. The body's doing something because a few months later, those RBCs needed to rise, and they did, and so the body will decide which immune system cell to sacrifice. Now let's keep moving. Go to the comprehensive metabolic panel. Again, your sodium, your potassium. Again, keep in mind what I said about minerals. Potassium's pretty high at 4.9. That could reflect a problem in the kidney. Sodium's a little low. That could reflect a problem in the adrenals. We don't know that. It says the sodium's low. It may or it may not. Again, just on the basis of the fact that the sodium's low and the potassium's approaching high, that's just a clue. By itself, it doesn't mean anything. And keeping in mind that if it's like that in the blood, low in the blood, in this case, the truth, it's because the individual gave up salt because they had high blood pressure. That's why the sodium was low. They gave up salt. But there could be many other things. And all of this you have to interpret. So you're not going to do the interpretation, but don't let somebody just give you something and not try to correlate it to the whole of you. Because if you get it done now, you save yourself much later. Let's keep moving. Your BUN, your creatinine, again, these are byproducts of muscle metabolism. And the byproducts of muscle metabolism relate to many factors, one of which is, can the kidneys get rid of this? So when you see these go high, and in this case, the BUN was high. It was at 29. The BUN was at 29. And that's high. And what does that mean? It means the kidneys weren't working fast enough. Or it means the muscles might have been disintegrating too fast. In this case, the kidneys weren't working strong enough at that time. And so you see the BUN go way up. You might have seen the creatinine go way up. It's high normal. What you don't want to see is the GFR. That's the filtration rate in the kidney start to go too low. Once the filtration rate in the kidney starts going low, you start running into real problems. Again, what was this individual's GFR a year ago or 2 years ago? Let's keep going, and we're going to move all the way to the cardiac profile. Now, your cardiac profile, your cholesterol, your triglycerides, your HDL, your LDL. The HDL, if you go to my pictures on the site, the HDLs, we call that the good cholesterol because the HDL can take the bad cholesterol that's stuck on the inside of your arteries. Go to picture number 14. Picture number 14, reverse cholesterol transport. The HDL extracts cholesterol from the plaque and transports it back to the liver. When you get your HDL and your LDL, the reason HDL is so important is because it can pull plaque off the inside of the artery and transport it to the liver. And the liver will dump it into the gallbladder and flush it out of the body. If your biliary system's open. So if your biliary system's open, your HDLs can go eat the plaque off your arteries and send it. So you want to bring down the incidence of plaque on the arteries. You lower your total cholesterol. You lower your LDL, all types of your LDL. Just lower it. In that respect, that's a useful insight. And you bring up your HDL, your good cholesterol, lowering your LDL, and rest assured that puts the balance of trade more on the side of breaking down plaque than building up plaque. But then you've got to start to get hip to another concept, and that is that your LDL cholesterol can be broken down into many particulates. So if you are capable of it, get back to that other page that we were just looking at with the HDL cholesterol. Your HDL is going to be broken down. Your LDL, is going to get broken down. Your LDL cholesterol gets broken down today into particles of small cholesterol, your VLDL, your IDL, and your very, so you've got your very low density lipoproteins, your intermediate density lipoproteins. These are subdivisions of your low-density lipoproteins. Your LDLs now are broken down. And you can see this in a chart. We put it in a pretty easy-to-understand chart. And that's with picture number 17. Look at picture number 17. Picture number 17 breaks your LDLs into your VLDLs and IDLs. So when you get your LDL, the LDL is now considered not so important unless it's broken down into individual particles. And if you've got more particles, more VLDLs, higher VLDLs, it's like this. Once you get your LDL, is it one big blob of cholesterol? Or is that LDL hundreds of little blobs? Breaking down your LDL into VLDL and IDL is an important understanding. So two people can have the same LDL. One is a big blob, and the other is an LDL broken down into thousands of little particles. That is more suggestive of a problem. And you want high HDL then to break all that off the inside of your artery if it's there. But paramount to all of this discussion is a measurement in your blood work you should be making your doctors get you, and that is oxidized cholesterol. Now, there's a lab, CMB lab, in Cyprus down here in the Southland that will measure your oxidized cholesterol. LabCorp will also measure your oxidized cholesterol. And your oxidized cholesterol, of all of your measurements, reigns supremely more significant. Now, Lad McNamara, one of the more maverick medical doctors, look at the two graphs that he's written out. Look at the graph on 20 and the graph on 13. Look at the graph on 20. The relationship between LDL cholesterol and coronary heart disease. And if you look at that, you might have to study it later on your own, but if you look at that, it's just telling you that, yeah, as LDL goes up, coronary heart disease goes up. But look at graph number 13, and that's the relationship between oxidized LDL and coronary artery disease. When your low-density lipoproteins, even worse, all small particles, so high VLDLs, have already been chewed up by free radicals, in other words, oxidized, in other words, your oxidized LDL goes up, the risk of heart disease, heart attack goes up exponentially. The real measurement is not LDL. The real measurement is oxidized LDL. The real measurement is not LDL. The real measurement is VLDL and IDL. Most people are having HDL and LDL done and triglycerides, and that's the end of it. And most people, if the LDL is normal, we leave it alone. And this is why we see these heart attacks out of nowhere surprising everybody. Again, I just got the one-minute warning. We're going to do part three next week. Happy New Year, and I'll see you then. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.